This is 2.1, an Netrunner Reboot Project podcast, episode 42, Nice All the Year. Hey, this is Remy. The title card for this week's episode is the core set card San San City Grid, where the flavor text is another set of dialogue, like it was last time. The first quote is, "I hear the coast is nice this time of year." And the other person says, "If you're in the right business, it's nice all the year." I don't really know what that has to do with the ability of San San City Grid to make agendas easier to advance. Maybe just because people are more motivated when you're living in San Francisco and San Diego. I don't know. Anyway, the reason I picked the card is because I'm going to spend quite a bit of time, the bulk of the episode, talking about fast advance. So this is kind of more of a basic episode. Maybe it would have fit in better earlier in the run of the show. But here we are. So basic thing about fast advance. But before we get there, we've got some business to finish up. Anonymous tip. The top 50 countdown. The top 10. So here we are to the end of the countdown. We have, of these 20 cards, 10 for Corp, 10 for Runner, four, that we have not seen yet here most of the way through the spin cycle. Now, unlike the last times, I'm not going to go 10 to 1 on one side, then 10 to 1 on the other. I'm going to interleave them and go back and forth as we climb up the top 10, or count down to number 1. As usual, I will introduce the big boys' comments, introducing each card, and then I'm also going to include some of the comments from the thread this time, since we are here in the top 10. First, number 10 for the Corp. Big Boy says it's the best ice in the game. Eli 1.0. The Runner side, number 10. A card many people forget about, but it's a great demonstration of how powerful a card is when you don't actually need to play it to get its effect. I've had worse. This comes out of the third deluxe box. It is an anarch event that allows you to draw 3 cards. So that's just like Diesel. However, the difference is that whenever it is trashed by net or meat damage, it also lets you draw 3 cards. So, protection. A fluffy one said in the comments, "I love this. Never build anarch without it." The Runner side, number 9, what makes Parasite out of Shaper terrifying? Clone Chip. Gaminet adds, also with the help of self-modifying code, flips a Runner rig out so fast. Also means sometimes Shapers don't need a serious killer and can just ride Sharpshooter out. Also responsible for Shaper shenanigans, turns where they do 30 things and declare, "That was click one." Big Boy responded, "Yeah, it does 100 things." And Muryu said, "3 clone chip, I think you mean 3 more parasite." Number 9 for the Corp. It makes money, turns on Archer, and closes games. The best rush agenda in the game. Hostile Takeover. Number 8 for the Corp. The best 3-2 in the game. Project Atlas. Gaminet says the first Atlas is a 4-2, and once you have that counter, your chances of winning go way up, be it getting the winning agenda, SEA source, Jackson, or hedge fund. Number 8 for the Runner. The most burst econ you can get from one card, if you can use it properly. Stimhack. Number 7 for the Runner. The benchmark for Runner Tempo. Andromeda, dispossessed Risti. Number 7 for the Corp. When you want your deck to have 19 points in it. Global Food Initiative. This comes from the final deluxe box. It's a neutral 5-3 agenda. Costs and influence is also only limit 1, but it's only worth 2 points to the runner, even though it's worth 3 points to the Corp. Number 6 for the Corp. Can you believe you used to be able to run 3 of these? The Future Perfect. This is in the upcoming second deluxe box, a Jinteki 5-3 agenda, also limit 1. This is a revision for the reboot project, though. If it's not installed, you play a Psy game, and if you win it, the runner can't steal it. Number 6 for the runner, the Backbone of Shaper, self-modifying code. Number 5 for the runner, breaks stuff for 0. That's good. Yogg.0. Number 5 for the Corp, the game's best backup plan, Scorched Earth. Number 4 for the Corp, one of the only ways to proactively give the runner a tag, Breaking News. Number 4 for the runner, used to be number 1, but a small cost nerf can be a big deal, Parasite. So I asked in the comment for this card, so increasing the cost from 2 to 3 dropped it from number 1 down to number 4. What would happen if you increased the cost from 3 to 4? Cleric said, to some extent, you can estimate this by seeing whether people play Deja Vu in Anarch. Getting 2 parasites with it is kind of like Deja Vu being a cost 4 parasite. I think it's playable for sure, but 4 is a lot. Parasite has the potential to be the kind of card you play nearly no matter the cost, though. The effect is so unique and works so well with other strong cards that until it gets seriously hard to pay for, I think you cut other cards to fit more econ before you start cutting Parasite. Gaminet gives a more concise response, maybe down to number 10. The effect and synergy with Datasucker is still insane. I think once you hit 5 cost, it might no longer be a 10 of 10 card. Whereas the big boy says, I think at 4, it's not a 10 of 10 anymore. Probably around number 10 or so, yeah. In other words, not a 10 rated card, but still ranked number 10 in this list. Big boy goes on, at 5 cost, it's actually not great, I think. I think what happens is a lot of other cards get worse too, like medium. I think noise is terrible with 4 cost Parasite. There, the difference once again rears its head of what a difference a credit can make. Number 3 for the runner. The Reason Criminal Works. Desperado. Ugin Ronin says, I thought Account Siphon was the reason Crim worked. And the big boy says, that's the other reason. I said, it's interesting that this card is still ranked so high without the MU. Where would the original version be ranked? Or if the nerf had kept the MU but increased the cost to 4 or 5? And the big boy says, I think it's in the same place. Whereas Ugin Ronin says, it baffles me that all of the best cards in the game have taken nerfs and are still this good. Number 3 for the Corp, the best ID in the game. Haas Bioroid, Engineering the Future. Aoashi said, it's funny how the best ID in the game is unplayable at 10 influence. So the nerf for Engineering the Future was reducing the influence from the standard 15 down to just 12. But the big boy has said, we tried it at 10, and as he goes on to say here, Fast Advance is playable at 10, but Glacier isn't. So 10 influence kills it, makes it strong in one way, not in another, so therefore not a strong overall ID. But then 12 makes it the best ID in the game. Number 2 for the Corp, Glacier's Trump Card, Caprice Nisei. This comes in the last pack of this cycle, so we're two packs away. It's a Jinteki upgrade. Before the runner can access the server, they have to play a Psy game, and if they lose, end the run. Number two for the runner. The rite of passage everyone needs to learn to play around. Account Siphon. Again, here Ugin Ronin jumped in, a noted Siphon hater. At least I can rejoice in the biggest disrespect allowed to such a well-regarded card. A second place. Suck it, Account Siphon. Gaminet says, at least you aren't playing FFG Runner. It was really common for people to say, yeah, just play two or three Account Siphon. It'll be fine. With the two cost, it now has an opportunity cost. Back in the day, as Gabe, really commonly click one of every game was Siphon since it was free. Zaylee, winner of the most recent World's Seasonal Tournament, playing a deck with Max and Account Siphon in it, says, the card. This one is the fun card. Siphon has the most intricate gameplay and is the reason that Corps have to play multiple styles in the same deck. Whenever I play formats without it, I miss it. And the big boy said, Siphon at number two is probably controversial. If it still cost zero, it would definitely be number one, or at least be number two behind the two-cost Parasite. So, Parasite was number one, is now number four because it has been nerfed. Account Siphon could have been number one with the Parasite nerf, but instead is number two with its nerf. So what's the number one card for Runner? Well, theoretically, you've already figured out what it is, although it's possible that you just don't remember the last, 59 cards I've listed off over the last several weeks. It is the card that makes the rigs of a huge number of the best decks possible. It is Data Sucker. Fluffy One says, this is probably the card that defines Netrunner for me, and also why I kept losing to Shaper by icing Centrals before my remote and giving them setup time. Gaminat responds with, it's hard to fully deny Data Sucker, but also building a rig without it is rough since Reboot has no exceptional killers. Like Mimic is really good for 65% of encounter dice, but there's no efficient boost break killers. There's Garrot, and he does cost one less now, but 2 MU and 3 influence is a lot. Point being that you need to have a killer with Data Sucker in it. With Data Sucker with it, rather. So, number one, back over to the Corp side. We got up to number two with Caprice. What is number one? The big boy says, the Savior, of course. Jackson Howard. And not really much was said here in the comments. I had a lot to say about Jackson Howard. If you'd like to revisit some of that, not only my comments, but also a very long article from early Netrunner enthusiast Alex Rockwell. Go back to episode 31, the archived memories segment there. The Toolbox. This is the segment where we look at decks and how they work and how they're put together. And so this is going to be, as I said, a pretty basic topic, but since it's one that I've never been very comfortable or familiar with, let's spend some time talking about it. It is Fast Advance. Let's start off easy by taking the definition of Fast Advance from the Android Netrunner Comprehensive Unofficial Rules Wiki, Anchor. To Fast Advance is to install, advance, and score an agenda in a single Corp turn. So a Fast Advance deck is a deck that revolves around doing that. Strategy. According to Anchor, Fast Advancing is significant as it allows the corporation to score an agenda without needing to have the agenda installed in a remote server during a runner turn. Corporation therefore does not need to have a remote server strong enough to keep the runner from accessing the agenda, or to bluff that the agenda is an uninteresting asset or a dangerous ambush. The crucial limiting factor that prevents a corp from advancing all their agendas, or rather fast advancing, is that they only have 3 clicks to spend per turn. Typically, in order to score an agenda, they will need to spend 1 click installing it, then another click for each advancement up to the agenda's advancement requirement, before finally they can score it, at no click cost. Fast advance mechanics. Fast advancing happens in a few different ways, depending on the agenda. 2 advancement requirement agendas, such as breaking news or hostile takeover, can be scored any corp turn that the corp has 2 credits spare by spending all 3 clicks. There are very few of these agendas, and they are only worth a single agenda point. 3 advancement requirement agendas, such as AstroScript Pilot Program or Accelerated Beta Test, are 1 click short of being scored in a single turn. They are usually fast advance with the assistance of SanSan City Grid, which lowers the advancement cost of an agenda by 1, Biotic Labor, which, effectively, gives the corp a 4th click for the current turn, or by spending the agenda token on an AstroScript pilot program to place an advancement token without spending a click, though, of course, not anymore. And we'll talk briefly in just a minute about the changes that Reboot has made to the ability to fast advance. Finally, 4 or more advancement agendas are occasionally fast advanced via a combination of techniques above or other advanced techniques, like combining a scored efficiency committee with multiple shipment from SanSans, but this is rare. One example of a deck that does exactly this is the Next Design Rush Precon deck that uses fast advance techniques coupled with rush techniques. Counter strategy. Since the corp never needs to install an agenda in a remote server, in order to win, the runner cannot rely on having a dominant board position and remote control to win. Typically, the runner must attempt to steal agendas from HQ or R&D, usually with the help of multi-access cards like the Maker's Eye or HQ interface. Alternatively, the runner can attempt to prevent the corp from fast advancing by trashing required cards like SanSan City Grid or Biotic Labor, increasing the advancement requirement of agendas using cards like Chakana or The Source, denying the corporation the credits required using cards like Account Siphon, Vamp, or Lamprey, which is a card that comes in the first pack of the 3rd cycle. It's an Anarch virus that drains a credit from the corp on a successful HQ run. And incidentally, the only card on Netrunner DB that the big boy posted a review for. To include a few additional comments about this, I'm going to go to a Reddit thread that is from around the same time as the article I'm going to read in the next segment, March of 2014, called Keys to Winning with Fast Advance. The original poster, Lee Noko, says, I'm thinking about making a fast advance deck, either NBN or HB, and was wondering what are the main components and cards to getting fast advance to work, and what are some cards I should be looking out for on the runner's side. Following that, the highest rated post is one by Neutronica. It's a great post. It explains how the Astro Train works, chaining together AstroScript pilot programs. But since that does not exist in Reboot, and it was nerfed heavily in Fantasy Flight's version toward the end, and it doesn't exist in Null Signal's version of the game, there's really no sense in going into it here. But if you'd like a clear explanation of why it was so challenging to play against and so dominant, how it won, how it lost, how the runner could counter it, you can follow the link in the show notes. Zion766 said, fast advance is when you use Biotic Labor, SanSan, Psychographics, Trick of Light, Director Haas, and or Haas Arcology AI to cheat out agendas by scoring them the turn you put them down. Rush decks use Burst Economy and Cheap End the Run Ice to score agendas before the runner gets breakers out. A lot of decks end up doing both things, so the meanings tend to get muddled. Another key component of the article that's coming up in a minute. Fast Advanced decks differ greatly between strategies. A Psychographics deck would run mid-season replacements and a lot of tagging ice, along with tag punishment, like Closed Accounts and Scorched Earth. It would want to run a lot of asset-based economy and San City Grid to keep the runner poor. HB would do something similar, but run Biotic Labor and cards that let you reuse it. Alternatively, you could build a big ice tower and use Director Haas or San City Grid to push agendas through. Haas Arcology AI isn't a true fast advance card. You put it in an always advanced deck with traps like Project Junebug or Aggressive Secretary. That way, if they run it, you didn't lose much. If they don't run it, you can sneak through an agenda. Malvoli Zero adds this comment, fast advance is expensive. San and Biotic Labor cost a lot of credits, so you need good economy. It's also generally not very fast. Maybe a different word there. Quick might be the better word. So fast advance is fast, it's fast advancing, but fast advance is not fast in that you might have a long game, so it's not quick, few turns needed. Since you are scoring agendas out of hand, you're only worried about the runner taking them from your hand, and especially R&D. The runner needs to make a lot of runs to find agendas in these, so you want ice that's expensive to pass, taxing ice, such as Eli 1.0 or Caduceus. Ending the run isn't as important, although you can put some end-the-run ice in. If you're playing a fast, risky, the world is yours deck, you can have a cross between a rush and a fast advanced deck which actually utilizes only end-the-run ice, since due to shorter games, install cost of icebreakers features more heavily in the runner's expenses. I just thought that was an interesting paragraph because not only does it nicely explain the value of taxing ice, but it also saying, hey, if they want it from HQ or R&D, make them pay to get in all the time. But it also mentions why using end-the-run ice primarily in a rush deck is useful. Because of shorter games, install cost of icebreakers feature more heavily in the runner's expenses. So normally, the runner is, has to pay more installing a big icebreaker, but then they get the value back by repeated runs. A rush game is going to be shorter, so there's less of a value. Matrix Analyzer. Let's talk about the reboot changes specifically to the fast advance cards that have been alluded to this point. So the big three, Astroscript, Biotic, and Sanzan, have all seen significant nerfs. The big nerf, of course, is to Astroscript Pilot Program, which previously allowed you, with a token that you gained from scoring it, to place that token at instant speed and no cost and no click cost on a card that can be advanced so as to score it. So basically what you would do is you'd score your Astroscript first, and then on a subsequent turn, you could install, advance, spend the token from the previous Astroscript, and score another 3-2, ideally another Astroscript, which you can then do the same thing with the next one. Well, again, it was nerfed in Fantasy Flight's version because I think it was just limited to one per deck. But here, the nerf that was given is that you can't use that token on a card that was installed this turn. So now, Astroscript is just not a fast advance card. Like, not in the sense of it all is done in one turn. Instead, it fits into what you would call a never advance archetype, which is something for a future show, I suppose. In never advance, you're always installing cards and not advancing any of them the turn they're installed. And so the question, is that an asset? Is that an agenda? Is that an upgrade? That's the big question that the runner has to figure out. And so Astroscript tokens are now used on those previously installed cards. Or on, it does more quickly advance a card that's a 4-2 or a 5-3 and help those be easier to score. And it's still a 3-2 agenda. So it's still just because if a 3-2 agenda was blank, it would often still be worth running. A biotic labor, the change is influence cost has been increased from 4 to 5. Biotic labor is an operation that gives you an extra click. So that nerf means that biotic labor is harder to use in NBN and that's relevant because NBN is where a lot of the other fast advanced tools have traditionally been. So giving them also influence of 4, still not easy, 5, much harder, easier access to biotic labor to flesh out that suite is important. What they would do sometimes is have a biotic labor in NBN just to get that first AstroScript scored. So then you probably want more than one. Maybe you want 2 or 3. Well, now if you have 3 and you're NBN, you're using all your influence. And of course, scoring the first AstroScript is not as big of a deal either. Although still, of course, since it's an influence adjustment, it's just as valuable and just as good out of HB Fast Advance. And then the other big member of the triumvirate is SanSan CityGrid, whose functionality and cost has not been reduced, although its trash cost has been reduced from 5 to 4. This is the upgrade, again, that reduces the advancement cost of agendas by 1. So this is valuable in that it makes the corp a little less secure, a little more vulnerable to runner attack. That trash cost of being 20% reduction in cost, 1 credit can make a big difference. 4 is still expensive for the runner, but 5 is, well, it's more expensive. So other cards that were mentioned, one of them is Psychographics, which is used in a tag-based fast advance. No change made to that. This is an operation that places advancements on a card equal to the number of tags that that the runner has. But used in tandem with mid-season replacements, an operation that gives the runner tags based on how much your trace strength exceeds their link strength, that has been changed. The trace strength on mid-season reduced from 6 to 3. So that weakens that strategy. Trick of Light, which is advancement-based fast advance, has seen no change. It also can be used for a number of other things. It's an operation that moves 2 advancements from 1 card to another. So, you know, basically it's play 1 card, then advance something twice. But there's a lot more moving parts there, right? So you have to have advanced some other card a couple of times on a preceding turn, paying in advance. And that's one of the powers of the traditional fast advance is really you just have to be sitting on a lot of money, have the cards in hand, and then just bam, it happens. Trick of Light, you're at least advertising it in advance. Also mentioned were Director Haas. Now this has not seen, it's seen a change, but no nerf. In fact, a buff, because Director Haas, as one of the executives, 5 influence executives, gave 2 points to the runner when stolen. Well, that's too much. So now she gives only 1 point to the runner when stolen, which means it's more feasible to include Director Haas in your deck. It's an asset that gives you an extra click, just like biotic labor, right? Same concept. It's an extra click to use. Or mandatory upgrades, I suppose. Mandatory upgrades could also be used, but you got to score that first 6-2. And Haas Arcology AI is another asset. Its res cost been reduced from 2 to 1, so it's also received a buff. And this one you advance while res, and then you can take one of those advancements off of it to gain an extra click on a future turn. So it also functions like a biotic labor, but one that you're advertising and have to use in advance. So you have to use it in advance like Trick of Light. It's being advertised like Director Haas. So these are all things that weaken the fast advance strategy, make it something that the runner can actually interact with. And that's really the focus here is, you know, the Astro Chain, the Astro Train, even using biotic labor out of NBN, all of those things, the corp is just playing its own game. All it has to do is get the right cards in the right order and then just bam, bam, bam. Runner can do very little to stop it. It was one of the aggravating things to people about the game and one of the things that Reboot was aiming at adjusting. The other type of Fast Advance, which was mentioned, as I said, it's in the next design deck, is Efficiency Committee and Shipment from Sandsound. Again, neither of these has seen a change. Efficiency Committee is an agenda that gives you 3 tokens, and each token lets you gain a click, but you can't use that click to advance cards. Meanwhile, Shipment from Sandsan also has seen no change, just lets you place 2 advancement tokens on a card that can be advanced. The reason why these work together is because Efficiency Committee can give you the extra click to play the Shipment from Sandsan that does the 2 advancements, but because that's not advancing a card, it's using that token to play a card, right? It's sort of doing an end run around the rules, but that's how it's designed to work. But again, you've got a lot more moving parts here. You have to have scored Efficiency Committee first to make this work. It's a 4-2. It's a crucial thing, but scoring a 4-2 is certainly a lot more challenging than scoring a 3-2. And again, you're advertising what you're doing. So you're giving the runner a chance to interact with the situation. So those are the major Fast Advance cards and how Reboot has made adjustments to them as needed. Archived Memories, Slowing Down Fast Advance. This is a StimHack article from March of 2014, so a little bit advanced from where we are in the card pool by a pack or maybe 2. But the cards he discusses here are, the vast majority are what we already have. Most, if not all. This is an article written by Dan DiArgenio, who would later in 2014 become world champion at the 3rd Netrunner Worlds. World champion for the first time. He also won in 2015. I previously covered an article from Dan back in episode 17, Tower of Defense, where he talked about Glacier in Netrunner. And so here he's talking about Fast Advance. Mostly I'm just going to read this article. There are a couple of deck lists in it. So I know that could be kind of a heavy slog to listen to. I'll try to make that as painless as possible. There are a lot of benefits to moving fast in the game of Netrunner. On the runner side, if you're quick to run out of the gates, that might mean free accesses before the corporation can afford to res their ice. If you can set up your rig in short order, that gives a corporation less time to score agendas behind their Ice Wall Enigma server. As the corporation, if we've got strong burst economy and cheap end the run ice, that means we may be able to score a few points quickly. Perhaps most importantly, if the corporation can install and score agendas all in one turn, the runner won't have a chance to access that agenda from a remote server. This is called Fast Advance, and it is perhaps the single most powerful corp tactic in competitive Netrunner. The difference between Rush and Fast Advance. There is some confusion about the terminology here, and to understand this article, you're going to have to understand the difference. Rush decks are designed to set up a secure remote server very quickly and score as many agendas in that server as possible before the runner has the cards and credits necessary to get in. Of course, Rush decks can't expect to score a whole 7 points in this way very often, so they also incorporate other strategies to take advantage of a runner who is being pressured to get into your remote quickly, such as program destruction to catch the runner off guard, or flatline threats to slow them down. I will insert here that the Super Modernism deck that we discussed several episodes back out of Wayland is a Rush deck, and it does try to score the whole 7 points as a rush. Back to the article. Fast Advance is a tactic defined by installing and scoring an agenda in the same turn, there are a number of ways to accomplish this. 2-1 agendas, like breaking news and hostile takeover, can be scored from your hand without any additional help. Biotic labor gives us the extra click necessary to fast advance a Project Vitruvius. AstroScript Pilot Program's Agenda Counter ability can be used without spending a click, which affords us the ability to score the next Astro from our hand. And again, as we just discussed, one of the key nerfs in Reboot means that this is not true anymore. Because of how difficult it can be to stop a runner from setting up their rig in the long run, Fast Advance has become very popular in competitive corporation decks. It doesn't matter much if the runner can get into all of your remote servers in the late game if you never have to put any agendas there. I believe a large amount of confusion stems from the fact that many rush decks incorporate Fast Advance. If you can rush a single AstroScript pilot program behind a Chimera, you might never have to score an agenda out of that remote again for the rest of the game. The two strategies complement each other nicely. It is often easy to rush a few points early and score the rest of your points from your hand once the runner sets up well enough to get into your remote. However, just because your deck plays Fast Advance does not mean that it has to rush. Why give up the rush? In this article, I'm going to spotlight a few Fast Advance decks that sacrifice rushing power in favor of a stronger late game. But why would we want to skip the rush? There are plenty of good reasons not to play a rush deck. Runners have a lot of tricks up their sleeves these days. Once you install an agenda in a remote server, the runner might account siphon you so that you can't res the ice protecting your remote. They might have inside job or test run for Femme Fatale to give them the ability to get into your remote much faster than it appeared they were able to. They could even play a self-modifying code and a stim hack and steal your agenda despite starting their turn on 0 credits and no icebreakers in play. Beyond that, the ability to rush depends on you playing the right cards. If you play cheap end-the-run ice and a lot of burst economy, rushing agendas out of the gate can be trivial. However, your next bronze and ice wall are going to look pretty silly once the runner installs a Yogg.0 and a Corroder. And your green level clearance isn't going to generate a very significant amount of economy in the late game. The more you build your deck with the ability to rush, the worse your deck is going to be going deep. Ice, like Eli 1.0, is super solid for a long game. Slap this on R&D, and the runner is going to have to pay a significant amount of money to get in, even once they install Corroder. This is hugely advantageous for use on central servers, because they need to be protected deep into the game. However, it's a pretty miserable rush card. If you try to score an agenda behind an Eli 1.0, you run the risk that the runner runs it on click 1 and simply clicks through it. As innocuous as it may seem, Pad Campaign can be one of the strongest economy cards in the game. If you play a Pad Campaign on turn 1, it might very well net you 15 credits over the course of the game if the runner doesn't trash it. This raw power comes at a cost. Pad Campaign actually slows you down when you play it. It is going to take 3 turns just to recoup the cost of installing and resing it, hindering your ability to rush agendas. And, because it can be trashed, you often want to play a piece of ice to defend it, slowing you down further still. Cards like these are the reason we might not want to rush. When we slow down our game, we get more economy options and the ability to incorporate ice that is taxing to play against even once the runner inevitably sets up. Slow, Fast Advance. At its core, the idea behind slow, Fast Advance is to play cards that are expensive for the runner to deal with, to create a disparity between your credits and theirs. Once you have secured an economic lead, You can stack taxing ICE on your centrals to bury the runner in expensive tolls and trash costs. And finally, utilize cards like Sansan City Grid, Biotic Labor, and Ash that allow you to turn your extra credits into points without exposing your agendas to the runner. Meanwhile, your Turn 2 marked accounts is making you a whole lot of money because of how long it has sat in play. And your remotes just get more and more expensive for the runner to get through, while the cost of your fast advances never really goes up. In magic terms, slow fast advance decks are control decks whose win condition is to fast advance. Let's take a look at two HB fast advance decks to illustrate how the change of a single card can significantly slow your game down and what that means for the deck's overall strategies. And so here he has two HB decks, one from 2013 Petri's S2, a first place corp deck, and the other from a Garden Grove Plugged In Tour event in 2013. Both of them run the same set of agendas, 11 of them, 3 accelerated beta test, 1 Director Haas pet project, 3 efficiency committee, 1 Gila Hands Arcology, and 3 Project Vitruvius. Both run 6 of the same assets, 3 Adonis Campaign, 3 Jackson Howard. Both run 3 Sansan City Grids. Both run 6 of the same operations, 3 Biotic Labor and 3 Hedge Fund. Both run similar ICE suites. So they both have, one has 2 Eli, 3 Ice Wall, 3 Wall of Static. The other has 3 Bastion, 3 Ice Wall, 3 Wall of Static. Those are pretty similar. One has just 3 Enigma. The other has 2 Enigma and 3 Next Bronze. They both have 3 Grim and 3 Roto Turret, but one adds in an Ichi and 2 Chimera. Those are fairly similar, I think, just reflecting the different card pool available for the second deck. The main difference he's talking about, the change of one card, is that one deck runs 3 Successful Demonstration, the other deck runs 3 Eve Campaign. Here are his comments. These two decks have a lot in common. Both are HB fast advance decks using Biotic Labor and Sansan City Grid to score 3-2 agendas from their hand. However, there is one major difference between these two decks. One uses Successful Demonstration, and the other uses Eve Campaign. What does that mean for the playstyles of these two decks? Both of them are clearly capable of both rushing and fast advancing, but one of them has more staying power. Eve Campaign is a ridiculously powerful economy card if you can get it to work for you. You're netting 11 credits, in fact now it's 12, for the single card and the click to play it. However, it's a big trash target and you often want to take the time to defend it. If you find yourself deciding on turn 2 or 3 whether to install an Eve Campaign or an agenda, you might decide it is more prudent to play the Eve Campaign and secure an economic lead rather than try to gain an early point lead and risk getting your agenda stolen. Successful Demonstration, on the other hand, rewards you for rushing your agendas. If you manage to pressure the runner by rushing agendas, they're more likely to run into your ice without a way to break it and turn on Successful Demonstration. It might net you less than half the credits that Eve Campaign does, but it's going to get you those credits faster, despite the possibility of it being a dead draw late in the game. Here are a couple of my own dedicated slow fast advance decks that have done well for me. These decks have little or no rushing power at all. First is NBN Taxman, out of Making News. It has 11 agendas, 3 Astroscript Pilot Program, 2 Breaking News, 3 Character Assassination, 3 Project Beale. The 8 assets are 3 Jackson Howard, 3 Marked Accounts, and 2 Pad Campaign. The upgrades, 6 of them, are 2 Ash, 1 Bernice Mai, and 3 Sansan CityGrid. The 6 operations are 3 Hedge Fund, 3 Sweeps Week, and the 18 ICE break down as 5 Barriers, 3 Eli, 2 Wraparound, that's one we don't have yet. I think it's coming in the very next pack. 7 Code Gates, 3 Pop-Up Window, 2 Toll Booth, 2 Viper, and 6 Sentries, 3 Caduceus, and 3 Draco. I've been running some variant of this deck since I started playing the game. On its face, it looks like a pretty uneventful, no-frills deck. It doesn't splash Biotic Labor. It doesn't play mid-season Psychographics combo. It doesn't play any tag punishment whatsoever. Instead, it plays a couple of boring, underappreciated economy cards in marked accounts and pad campaign, and a pair of ashes to make running taxing servers a whole lot more brutal. I piloted a variation of this deck to a win at my local store champs this past weekend, dropping 2 games in 8 rounds. The way that drip economy changes the NBN game plan cannot be understated. When you play all of this taxing ice like Caduceus, Eli, and Tollbooth, you have a pretty amazing long game even against decks like Catman that have super efficient rigs. So that would be your Kate with Ottman deck. And at 15 cards with a trash cost of 3 or more, the runner is going to have to make a tough choices about whether to trash your Sansans, your marked accounts, or to ignore both and pay to get into R&D. If you create a sufficiently expensive remote server, you can start to install assets, agendas, and upgrades, and just dare the runner to burn a whole turn checking to make sure whether your Jackson Howard isn't an AstroScript. Furthermore, breaking news, character assassination, Draco and Bernice help to ensure any runner relying on high investment resources, like Cotty Jones and professional contacts for economy, are going to face an uphill battle to keep those cards on the table. Marked accounts and pad campaign are absolutely central to this deck's strategy. It's expensive to build ice towers, and it's expensive to fast advance. If you're going to be doing these things in a long game, you're going to need powerful economy cards to set you up. The high trash cost means that if the runner wants to keep you off your economy, they will have to hurt their own economy early on, potentially creating scoring windows, or at the very least, slowing them down significantly enough to give you time to get some more drips online. This next deck is called Cerebral Gift, and it uses Cerebral Imaging, Infinite Frontiers, that is the big combo ID out of Creation and Control for HB. CI 7-point combo, a 7-point shutdown combo, is one I discussed several weeks back. And in fact, it was Dan DiArgenio who helped popularize the power of that deck. The suite here is 10 agendas, 3 accelerated beta test, 3 corporate war, 1 efficiency committee, 3 Project Vitruvius. It runs 3 Jackson Howard for assets. The 20 operations are 3 archived memories, 3 biotic labor, 3 blue level clearance, which we don't have yet, but it's like green level clearance only. More so. 2 celebrity gift, 3 green level clearance, 3 hedge fund, and 3 restructure. It runs 16 ice, 3 Eli for barriers, 3 Victor 2s and 1 Viper for code gates, and the 9 sentries are 3 Caduceus, 3 Ichi 1.0, and 3 Roto Turret. This deck takes slow to the extreme. Your goal is to never set up a remote server, and to win the game by generating a huge amount of credits while drawing your entire deck, closing out the game by playing Biotic Labor 4 times. Often you end up drawing very close to your entire deck in order to accomplish this. You come out of the gates with the goal of icing up HQ and R&D. Once these two servers have some taxing ice resed on them, you can start drawing cards and playing economy operations to increase your maximum hand size. This is your ability from Cerebral Imaging. Because you have such high-impact economy operations, along with Jackson Howard and archived memories to recur them, it's not difficult to accumulate 15 cards in your hand, with a few hedge funds to spare. The ice in this deck is purely taxing. Every single piece has two or more subroutines, and that generally means that the runner is going to have to pay in one way or another to get past them. Only having two servers to protect, in most cases, means that you have more money to draw cards and snowball advantage with economy operations while the runner takes blind, expensive stabs at your centrals. The agenda spread says a lot about how this deck plays. Why three corporate war and not three efficiency committee? Well, the short answer is that it doesn't actually matter. You hardly ever actually score those 4-2s. If you don't want to score them, why wouldn't you play a couple of profiteerings instead of the fourth 4-2? If you did, you'd be giving the runner more agendas to steal. You'd be shorting yourself one non-agenda deck slot. And by the time you want to score a profiteering, you'd probably be rich enough to biotic out the win in the next few turns anyway. Most importantly, because you're a slow, fast advance deck, you aren't in any hurry to score. If it's turn 7 and you still haven't found a 3 advancement agenda, it makes very little difference, because by the time you want to score, you will have seen over half of your deck and are bound to have something available. One interesting consequence of drawing your whole deck is that you find yourself in situations where the runner cannot possibly win the game even if they steal every agenda in R&D. This allows you to focus entirely on defending HQ with taxing ice and makes running beta tests appealing even when you don't have Jackson Howard ready to rescue agendas from the bin. When you only have one server to defend, and it costs the runner upwards of 10 credits to get in, that really is the ultimate way to create the kind of credit disparity that slow, fast advance decks need to start scoring. Sit down and stay a while. In the end, slow decks can afford you a lot of advantages. You can reduce variance by seeing more cards. There's bound to be a San-San and an AstroScript in there somewhere. You have more time to potentially outplay your opponent. And you're never totally out of a game just because the runner is fully set up. Do yourself a favor and put away the Chimeras for a second. Pick up a slow, fast advance deck and pour yourself a cup of coffee. It's time to take back the late game from the runners. We're in it for the long haul. He then finishes by mentioning his YouTube channel and his Twitch stream. And both of these are still available. His username is, I don't know how you pronounce it. Medio Hardcore is how I'd pronounce it, but it's spelled MedioHxcore. And he has just a metric ton of videos still up on Twitch and on YouTube. And of course, he's one of the all-time best players in the game. So watching him play is worth your time. Research Station. Let me come back and talk a little bit about pre-constructed decks in Reboot. This is a valuable resource to really get to learn the Reboot card pool, and also knowing that you're starting with pre-built good decks, you can just take one and start playing. All of the pre-constructed decks are by default loaded into Riteki, the Jinteki offshoot, Riteki. .net.fun. And so you can just start an account, load it up, pick one, and go. It's designed to be as plug and play and simple as possible. I'll provide links here in the show notes to the archetypes document that the big boy has designed and I've talked about before, where he discusses the three different axes that you can evaluate a corp deck on, one of them being its method of scoring. Fast advance being one of those methods. He also has it all. That document also talks about the 11 different aspects of a runner deck, but we're not getting into that today. There's also a link there in that, and I'll provide a direct link to the pre-constructed analysis for Corp decks that is just looking at each of the pre-cons and saying, here is their primary or secondary method of scoring. Here's how fast they go. Here's how their economy works. It's just a basic little table, a little spreadsheet. And as you'll see looking at that, in the pre-constructed decks, there are two where Fast Advance is their primary scoring method. They're both HB decks. One is just called HB Fast Advance. It's out of Engineering the Future. And the other is Next Rush, out of Next Design, the 40-card minimum, right? No, it's still 45. It just has less influence available. No, it has more influence. You know what? Never mind. Anyway, it's another ID that came in Creation and Control. And then the other two decks that have Fast Advance as a secondary scoring method. One is Spark Never Advance, which uses an ID from the fourth deluxe box for NBN. Its primary method, as the title says, is Never Advance, but Fast Advance is a secondary method. It has some of those tools there, basically. And the other is Wayland's Building a Better World Midrange, where its primary method of scoring is Tagged Trace Pressure, and then Fast Advance is a secondary method. Pre-constructed decks are a great resource. You check them out on retechie.fun. Many of the cards discussed in this week's episode are linked in the show notes. Music is from Alexi Action. The website that you can use to go to the Reboot Project homepage is netrunner2.1.com. As I said, you can go to retechie.fun. If you got a friend, or you just want to play against yourself, I guess you could make two accounts and load up some pre-constructed decks and go do some Fast Advance. Or you can look for games on the Reboot Discord server. Feel free to reach out to me to contact me if you have any questions or comments. The best place is probably, again, on the Reboot Discord server in the 2.1 channel, but you can email me or message me on Reddit or on StimHack forums or on BoardGameGeek or whatever. The AstroScript pilot program, we finally move out of the Android section of the Worlds of Android book. HB and Gentechie are sort of a big part. I mean, they're the base of the whole concept of the Android universe between the Bioroids and the clones. And that's all we've been talking about, pretty much, since I've been going through the Worlds of Android book. Well, now we're going to move on to NBN. Now, the structure of part one of Worlds of Android, there are three parts to the book, is first Haas Bioroid and Bioroids, then Gentechie and clones. We finished those sections. Then NBN and the network, and finally Wayland and the space elevator. So each of the things on the Corp is just like four pages, and then there's this big section on the remaining section. So we have two parts about NBN coming up. We'll do part one today, and then after that we'll go into several parts discussing the network. That's if you want to listen to it. And if not, thanks for listening to this part. See you next time. NBN. The sheer volume of data streaming through NBN servers at any given moment is staggering to most users. And this data fuels modern daily life as much as any helium-3 reactor. NBN collects, processes, and delivers the information its customers need straight to their pads so they can live the most productive, happy lives they can. The content they watch has been carefully curated just for them, and they get custom recommendations based on their location and daily routine. The average citizen is completely oblivious to the number of sensors and sec cams and cam drones they pass on a given day, but NBN watches over them all to keep them safe and secure. This future exists because of the innovations made by NBN. But the Corp was not always known by those letters. The mission of the Kane family's media conglomerates has always been to provide the most comprehensive portfolio of consumer programming available in their markets. as those early markets grew and the boundaries between them blurred to crisscross the entire world, the company underwent a series of mergers and conglomeration efforts. The end result was a media and technology corporation known as Vertex, which would come to dominate the global entertainment industry. Vertex scored government contracts to provide public media content, and it easily crowded out its few remaining competitors. Not only did it create the programming the global population hungrily consumed, it distributed that programming. It owned the companies responsible for producing, operating, and repairing the infrastructure needed for distribution. It also monopolized the entire marketing industry, as well as the brands for the items being marketed themselves. Vertex grew so large that it could single-handedly steer the global conversation. But it began to clash with some of the governments in the countries it serviced. Vertex was deemed a dangerous monopoly, and legislation was introduced that forced Vertex to be partitioned into its different parts, which were then broken up again into many regional entities. Network Broadcast News was one of dozens of minor spin-off corps, one headed by the father of Keith Randolph Kane. It was granted SansAn's busy media markets, and there it thrived for many years. Then, the blackout swept the world. Like all the other media corporations, Network Broadcast News was hit hard, but it had been experimenting with a new communication protocol that was not affected by the cyber attack. The world governments fast-tracked the development of this framework for a new network known simply as The Network. The technology division remained an NBN subsidiary, but was rebranded as Sync, and it catapulted Kane's company to new heights. Sync's runaway success immediately following the blackout allowed NBN to emerge as a key player in the industry. It brought up many of its cousin companies and reestablished itself as the premier global media corp. As the colonization of Luna got underway, it renamed itself the Near Earth Broadcast Network and relocated to New Angeles. As it expanded to the settlements on Mars, it became known as simply NBN. Vertex's media empire was reborn, and this time it spanned the solar system. Understanding the customer. Unlike Haas Bioroid's synthetic bioroids or Genteki's organic clones, NBN's flagship is less a tangible product, but a service. Information. Wayland, Genteki, Haas Bioroid, and other corporations build facilities, simulants, tools, vehicles, and other technological items. But NBN builds the tools that collect the data and supply the content people use to form their opinions, make decisions, and otherwise become more like who or what they want to be. NBN is able to provide such useful information to its customers because it knows them better than they know themselves. Thanks to the ubiquity of Sync's network infrastructure, NBN knows where its customers are at any given time, what they're buying, what they're looking for, who they're talking to, and what they're talking about. NBN aggregates this information and analyzes it using proprietary techniques so that its products and media provide exactly the experience its customers want, even before the customers consciously know they desired it. No other corp can come close to NBN's predictive power because no other corp can draw from NBN's incredibly detailed histories of billions of users. People choose and stay with NBN because it is the best and only corp that can accurately anticipate nearly all of a person's needs. To maintain this psychological monopoly, NBN uses a sophisticated outgrowth of brain mapping technology known as enhanced psychographics, or simply psychographics. By studying the activity and makeup of the human brain and its reactions to consuming media content, NBN is able to build an amazingly effective roadmap to replicate favorable responses. NBN's content is designed with specific psychographic profiles in mind, and every element is carefully curated to appeal to or shape the thinking of the audience. With a sufficiently robust psychographic model, AI systems can edit or even create content on the fly to match the target demographic's profile. This ability can lead to disastrous results when applied indiscriminately, however, as the Winchester for Congress campaign discovered when localization subroutines changed the name of the candidate to Lopez for ads reaching his Latino constituents. NBN begins helping the lives of its customers from the time they are children with sophisticated edutainment toys, games, and products that track and guide a child's psychological and intellectual development. As these young consumers grow, NBN is there every step of the way to give them the tools and information they need to become successful adults in today's fast-paced society. And when it's time to unwind, NBN has specially prepared programming that takes into account that consumer's interests and experiences from the time they received their first pad, usually when they were 1 or 2 years old. Constant surveillance and data collection is a minuscule price to pay for the convenience and productivity they enjoy, thanks to NBN's offerings.